When everyone is on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Can none of y'all mirror me back? Yeah, hear me rap, it's like hand G rapping his prime. I'm young H.O., rap's grateful dead. Back to take over the globe, now break bread.
Welcome back to Miami Nice. You fiends for mojitos, our horny campfire denizens, pals, sitting around the campfire. We're back in the humid climate of Miami. I'm Katie Walsh. I am here with my partner in crime, my partner in undercover vice operations, Blake Howard, wearing the shirt today.
Yeah, I'm
you can't see this. This is an audio podcast.
Audio podcast, but I am wearing I found a really rad original Miami Vice shirt, and it's very summery.
Shirt.
It's very, I like it. I was like, and it's, I really need more fiends in my life because I've worn it out to a couple of pubs in Australian summer and just no one appreciates it. And I'm like, this shirt. Sure, it needs some of the people who listen to this show to be around to actually like it. So
to appreciate it fully.
And our guest clearly has taste because like it's a good shirt. So there we go.
We have a great guest today. He is the editor and a movie critic at Strange Harbors. He is the great Jeff Zhang. I just want to say, so the reason why I wanted Jeff to be on this podcast, number one, Jeff is one of those people I follow on Twitter who I'm like, he always has the correct take. Like, I always am like, no, this is right. Like, I'm always, I appreciate a person who always has the correct take.
Even as early as 16 hours ago, he's like, Simulant starring Simu Liu is the funniest real movie that seems fake I've ever seen. And I literally thought it was a fake movie. So I went and looked it up and I was like, oh shit, this is real. Oh my God.
It's real. I watched the trailer and everything.
I was just like, this is a real movie. Oh, man. But no, Jeff, thank you so much for being a part of the show. Really appreciate you coming down and hanging out with us and talking all things Miami Vice. So firstly, because of your correct takes clearly on Twitter, I want to dive in with you straight away. Like, Miami Vice could be a fake movie. Like, it could be fake. Like, if you just had the lines and like random stills, you're like, is this real? And I also, I didn't think about that until I was like, could someone like put stills from Miami Vice's trailer up and people go, I don't know if that's real. And I think they absolutely could, but maybe there's something about that it's like some of it could be fake, but also now it is actually real. It is fantastic.
Yeah, for sure. I guess like maybe 2005, if you release those stills, maybe people would be like, this is a fake movie. That's not real.
Yes. Yeah, it would be like one of those like Ben Stiller fake movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
From Tropic Thunder, or one of those things where it's like an SNL sketch, like they just did an SNL sketch of like the gritty Super Mario remake, and which I have to say already exists. It's a 1993 movie, guys. Bob Hoskins.
Yeah. Katie is the curator of the Dirtbag Hall of Fame, Jeff. I'm not sure if you know, and Bob Hoskins really was the heavyweight champion of dirtbags for at least the entire period of the 70s. Bob Hoskins. Peak Bob Hoskins. He was a real man. Look what we used to have, people. We used to have real men like Bob Hoskins.
That is the peak male performance. You may not like it, but that is what it is.
I would almost
actors
argue.
Actors don't even look like him anymore.
I know.
Yeah.
No. No, there's a great Twitter presence, John Frankensteiner, that I think most of us would have seen. And he posts old clips from talk shows and stuff. And my favorite Bob Hoskins is that he got paid like, I don't know, like $200,000 to bait De Niro into being in The Untouchables. Cause Brian De Palma.
Oh, I heard about that.
Brian De Palma was like, well, if you're not going to do it, I'm going to get Hoskins. And so Hoskins is like, okay. And he sat down and he didn't get the part. He gave it to De Niro and he got it. And he said to De Palma afterwards, he goes, Brian, you cannot cast me in any movie you want forever. Like, I'll take $200,000 for doing basically nothing, for having a conversation. And my wife and I, you know, at a holiday or whatever, bless him. But yeah, so let's get started, man. It's so great to talk to you. This is obviously a very loosey-goosey confessional podcast where we kind of dive into all things Michael Mann and Miami Vice 2006 particularly, and we kind of want to know all about that. But like, are you a man head? Like that, let's start probably there.
I am a huge man head, and I just gotta say it's like an honor to be on this podcast because I've been listening to some old episodes, seeing some of the guests that have been on, so many esteemed journalists and film writers, and now you got me, guy who has Miami Vice in his Letterboxd fave. You know?
That's how we find you, man. That's how we find
a lot
find
to
people.
Live up to.
That's how we find.
That's how people. We find. We literally like troll Twitter and Letterboxd, being like, "Who has Miami Vice in their faves?" And I just, this is a small digression, but remember when we were all jumping ship for Twitter to Hive?
That's how you found.
It was like posting like four favorites. And I saw Jeff had posted Miami Vice and I was like, this guy's got correct takes and Miami Vice is one of his favorite movies. I need to get him on the podcast. Thank you, Hive. That was the only thing you've given us.
Can Hive, like, okay, this is another digression, but like, we really need to figure this shit out if there is another platform that's just Twitter but isn't Twitter
anymore. If
we're
jumping ship, yeah.
Yeah, it just, I can't, guys. I'm sorry. I'm in too deep. I forgot.
I know.
I'm in too deep. I forgot. Katie and I talk on Twitter all the time. We still get tagged. We find great people for the show.
We do business on Twitter.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard.
Still
to
bummed about it. I'm bummed about it.
Yeah, so. I'm definitely. All right, let's get to a better topic.
Michael,
you're a man head. When did it start?
Oh, Eat in high school?
Yeah.
Like many, many manheads, I guess.
Yes.
But
how was it? Was it a movie experience? Was it a VHS?
It was a VHS experience.
Yes.
Yeah. A friend of mine had it on tape. I borrowed it, watched it over and over again. It's so freaking good. I think Heat and Miami Vice probably flip-flop between the top spot for my favorite man But yeah, definitely.
So when Miami Vice came out, were you like, I'm there opening weekend, it's Michael opening Mann.
Night. Opening nice. Night, Miami Vice. And it's a funny story because I don't think people remember how close together Collateral and Miami Vice were to each other. It wasn't even 2 years, I believe. I think it was like a year and a half.
It's like 19 months. Collateral. It's like, months. It's very, it's I think the closest two of Michael Mann's movies have ever come out together. Because, Mohicans is 92, then Heat's 95, then Insider's 99, Ali 2001. Right. And so everything's like 3-4 years. And then it goes bang, bang. Collateral 2004, yeah. Miami Vice 2006.
Yeah. So 2004, I was already a Michael Mann head. And then I remember that summer, I got a bunch of buddies together to go see Collateral. We were all blown away, obsessed, coming out of the theater. Definitely converted a couple of them to be manheads as well. And then fast forward, 19, 20 months later, got the same group together. I was like, new Michael Mann, let's go. Go see Miami Vice. And as soon as the opening bars for Numb Encore hit, I was like pinned to my seat. Loved the entire movie all the way through. And then I came out, I was like on cloud nine. Everyone else hated it. All my friends hated it. They were like, what the fuck was that? That was not like Collateral at all. They were just so bummed about it. But I was so hyped. You know,
they were
so
like, funny. We are leaving your cults. We're no longer disciples. Bye. Get out.
It was a great 19 months. But sorry, Jeff, we're out.
Yeah, I mean, I was in college, so I wasn't like writing about film. I wasn't into film journalism or anything like that. I just liked movies. I liked watching them. And I was salty for years about that. I was like salty for like a whole decade and a half. Like, I didn't really write about movies or really join this circle until like 2019, 2020. And then that's when I realized like so many journalists and writers that I respect were like, oh, Miami Vice, secret masterpiece, or maybe not even not so secret masterpiece now. Like, the reclamation's complete, I feel. But I was like, nice, vindication from that experience I had 15 years ago, like holding on to
holding on to the bitterness. Holding on to the bitterness.
Are you still friends with your college buddies who or did it rip your friendships apart?
A few of them, yeah.
You're Miami like, this person doesn't have taste. I'm not going to hang out with them.
Miami Vice ruining and creating friendships from 2006.
Across the globe.
Across the globe. Exactly.
So did you feel like I'm alone on this island and I'm correct? Or were you like questioning yourself?
I just know what I like and I like what I like. So I'm not like, oh, who's right and who's wrong? I'm just like, you know what? I like this thing. I don't care what anyone else thinks. And I'm glad to see some sort of vindication all these years later, you know? So
it's, I think honestly, that is, I know this might sound like a bit like corny, but like, that's the coolest shit. Like, I love every film, like every film critic who is just like, I like what I like and I don't care. And even like friends of this show, like Bill Gabiri, like I know that like a terrible Jerry Butler movie is going to come out and Bilger's going to be like right there for it. And I'm it's fine. And like the other week I went and saw John Wick 4 with a buddy and it had some terrible trailer to a Liam Neeson movie, like a Liam Neeson actioner, 90 minutes long. Like he has to not stop driving his car or it'll explode. It's like, I don't even know what it is. And I said to my friend, like, I was like, I'm so excited. I'm unashamedly excited for that movie. And I'll be here on opening night if it even comes to cinemas in Australia, because Liam Neeson movies have a habit of like showing a trailer in a theater and like 3 weeks later, it's on like a streaming service for free. So it's very possible it won't ever come to an Australian theater. But I tell you what, I was like, yeah, I'm in. Like that 90 minutes, it looks totally stupid. I'm so down for that.
I'm totally into stuff like that. I was there for Gerard Butler's Plane. Love that movie. That was so fun.
Plane is great.
Yeah, Plane is great. Great movie.
No, I know. It's like you have to sort of develop that, I think, or at least like stand strong in it as a critic and like person who's talking to people online about movies, because it can be really hard to get shouted down or be like, wait, am I the only person who liked this? Yeah, like, this is really challenging. It is such a like vindicating thing to like see like the reclamation of Miami Vice or the seeing other people, you know, it's obviously been going on for like a decade now, but it's just been really fun for us to do it. I'm curious, like, maybe on your first watch or even what you've figured out in subsequent watches, like, did you ever realize like what it was specifically about the movie that like really gripped you? I mean, obviously the Linkin Park Jay-Z song, but you know, like, is there some specific element of the film that you just like really connected to or just like scratches that itch for you?
Oh man. So like, I think coming out of the theater the first time with all my friends, you know, like 2006 was like the height of YouTube armchair analysis, CinemaSins type stuff. And then like, you know, watching this back to back with like Collateral, you can see why people who loved Collateral went into this and they were like, what the fuck is this? You know, like, what is this movie? Not that Collateral doesn't have its own mood or vibe, but Miami Vice in and of itself is like a mood and vibe, you know? And it's not like the propulsive action thriller, bang, 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 A to B to C that Collateral is, you know, like that presence of Tom Cruise as the villain in that movie. It's just not, Miami Vice is not like that. You know, it's a whole like vibe. Like, I keep going back to that word. I think people overuse it, but that's what that is. And, you know, just watching the movie, it's hard to pin down what's so special about it, but I think, you know, the way that it doesn't hold your hand, throws you right into the action. Everything's just right under the surface and you kind of have to dig at it a little bit.
Yes.
I know coming out of the theater, some of my friends were complaining, like, these characters were terrible. Like, Colin Farrell and Jamie Foxx had no chemistry. The line readings were weird. Like, I don't understand what was going on. But, like, that's a lived-in relationship between those two characters. And they throw you right in the middle of that without explaining any of it. There's like no exposition. There's no resolution to the prostitution ring sting at the beginning of the movie. That's just to build the characters and the relationship and like the mood of the movie. And it just goes from one place to another and you just have to roll with it.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing looks like this movie either, especially back then. Like Michael Mann and his digital filmmaking is just a whole nother world, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if there's like I think Collateral and Miami Vice, like there's never gonna be a movie that looks like that ever again.
Yeah,
it's like they're of their own time and place and format and technology, but it's like no one ever achieved what he was going for in that time, and I don't think like anyone can go back in time or like can do that, can replicate what those movies are. So they feel sort of like museum artifacts even now.
Yeah,
it's like that whole the technological progression. We don't have the same regression to that digital film, digital video quality. Like it's easier to go and get a handheld video camcorder and shoot something and then transfer that in our new editing suite technology and get that there. Whereas like there was a very particular set, like you have to have cameras. Like I've like got an old like 2K camera like that I bought like a million years ago because I was like, oh, like if I ever want to shoot something, I want it to look like Miami Vice. And it's one of those things that's really weird. And you're so right, the CinemaSins thing. We've never mentioned it before, but you guys know like, I mean, I'm sure you probably do, but there's like those big reviews of Star Wars from like Red Letter Media, Plunkett. I don't know really what it is. But I remember one of the criticisms at the time was like of the movie Attack of the Clones, of which there are many criticisms. But it was like oh, look at these two guys. Like, we, like, you know, Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker and Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's like, they've got this dumb scene where they're in an elevator and they're like, oh, remember when you fell in the bed? And they're like, I remember the advice at the time was like, why didn't you just show these guys doing in action, being friends and having a relationship rather than like standing in an elevator that's digitally created and talking about their relationship and it being really false. And I'm like, well, the antithesis of that is Miami Vice. It's like, you know, like those Cinema Sins guys would probably be like, oh, it's stupid. You don't like even know, they don't talk about their friendship. It's like, no one talk, you don't talk yeah, about yeah, your yeah. friendship. Like you don't, it just is like you every time you go to the, like you go to a bar with your friend, or you go out to a restaurant, or you go catch a movie. You're not like, hey, Katie, remember when we became friends over a shared love of mine? We're not saying that. We're like straight in. You're just talking about whatever right. is on your mind. And it just feels like I think it's like there's an extreme. You asked for it. Like you asked for this thing and it's kind of asked and answered. You want it. Here it is. This is exactly what you wanted. Right. And then it's like, no, that doesn't happen. And you're like, okay. But you guys asked for stuff like this where people just jump in. Like you asked for it.
Yeah.
You don't want anything else. So yeah, it's really weird, but it's that convergence. It's like people wanted to fucking picking a plot hole in a movie is the most boring shit in my mind in the whole cinema discourse. It's just like,
what I think, it? Yeah. Even now, I think in film criticism, there's a lot of, I think too much focus on plot. That's why, like, when I'm writing my reviews or whatnot, I tend to like not talk about plot that much. I don't talk about like the plot, the pacing, or the performance. Those are like the most boring things you can, not boring things you can talk about, but like that's what everyone is talking about. But like I like to focus on like the authorial intent, the themes of the movie, what the movie feels like to me, you know, like the emotions behind the film. And you know, I think coming out of Miami Vice, everyone's like, oh, but they didn't explain this, and the characters don't talk to each other, and the plot doesn't make any sense. But like at the end of the day, especially for something like Miami Vice, like who gives a shit about that stuff?
Sorry, I mean, did you not see how beautiful Gong Li is? Were you not distracted?
It's like, would you rather have, you know, Colin Farrell like go up to Jamie Foxx and be like, I think I'm falling for the drug lord's girlfriend, or would you rather see Hola Chica?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
exactly,
that's all you need to know. Like cinema is a visual medium.
Yeah, or would you rather watch your best mate get in the boat you came to a place in and drive away across to Cuba with a girl who's really dangerous, and you're like AWACS, you know, you look over to the way you like try and go back on task and be like, okay, you know, this is totally natural for him to do it. But yeah, no, it's so silly. It's a very interesting, and that's probably why you're very good, Jeff. It's interesting to talk to a film critic who's only been doing it for a couple of years. And especially I call Katie like a real film critic. Like I play an instrument in the orchestra, but it's the tambourine. It's way up back. And so that's where I sort of am in the community, but on a very fringe take. But that's, for me, it's got nothing to do with the plot. It's the authorial intent, absolutely, whether that lands. You know, for me, like editing and the pacing of a movie is only really just to say, is this cohesive and does it maintain the mood, right? Like it's such a boring thing to go, oh, the pacing. It's like, also no one knows how a movie is made. And that's what's brilliant about Collateral. It's like talking to Stuart Beattie on this show, we had a little chat with him about Collateral, and he's like, he had this script for 10 years. He'd been tuning it through like five different producing companies, and it finally gets to Michael Mann, and then it spends another year in like multi-tiered development where they're like tuning it and tuning it. And it's like, it is a perfect machine of a script, great genre. And it's like, genre doesn't have to just be this thing that goes A to B to C and it's like really predictable. The funnest genre of movies in my mind are the ones that like have a really clear format, do broadly stick to a structure, but then fuck with it completely and just throw the author's perspectives, intent, moods in it. And then you're like, oh cool, it's like not bound, it becomes like bounded but boundless because they get to do whatever they want within the confines of that thing. Like that's why genre movies are exciting, action movies are exciting. Like the same reason we praise like a John Wick 4 for a fucking Lawrence of Arabia match cut. Like that's what that's what an action genre movie can do. It can just do whatever it wants.
Yeah, for sure. But I think that's also like why we love like Mann and for me also Scorsese, because they work across genres, like whether it's an action movie or a biopic, or for Scorsese, like, you know, a comedy or a movie about priests in Japan or whatever it is, that they are always kind of like returning to their sort of obsessive themes. Yes. Like, which obviously for Mann, we've talked a lot about, is like his the professionalism versus personal life and balancing those two. And then I think Absolutely. In Scorsese, it's always about like the relationships between men and like brotherly friendships and the complications between those kinds of relationships between men. But so it's like you can look at, you know, Kundun, or you can look at Mean Streets, or you can look at Silence and be like, what are the, you know, Scorsesean obsessively things that are we looking at? And then you can look in the same thing with Mann, where, you know, it's always about a hardened professional deciding how he's going to go about his life.
Is my elevated existence going to eat me alive? Is pretty much like a perennial question. It's just like, what's it going to be? Is it going to be an Ali? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be the FBI? Is it going to be fame? Is it going to be, you know, hubris? Or it's something as simple as this, is like, is taking the biggest drug dealer fictional in South America's girlfriend for a ride in a boat and going and shagging her face off in Cuba, is that going to end in problems? Probably. It's probably going to end in some trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what a romance, by the way.
Oh.
What a romance.
What a romance. It's peerless. Yeah. We've talked about it many times on the show. I think it's like, it started off being like cool and fun. And Katie and I just talking about the things that like we love. And even the screenings we've done with our cohorts of people, it's just increasingly become this huge romantic, horny gush fest, because everyone's just like, everyone's so beautiful and everyone's so in love. And isn't love so great in this movie? It's sensational.
Yeah, it's great. So when I was first watching the movie, I was already familiar with Gong Li and her work. And to see her in like a Western picture, I was a little worried. I was like, oh, are they doing like the Dragon Lady stereotype? You know, she's like the drug kingpin's... Well, I mean, she's not his wife, but like, you know what I mean? She's like the heavy, you know? And I was like, are they going to do that stereotype? And, you know, Mann does the opposite. She's like a fully lived in character with her own foibles and ambitions and part of this doomed romance. It's phenomenal. I love it so much. They did that one right. I was really, really happy for that. Yeah.
It's interesting how on the rewatches, it's just, you know, talking to Blake, like what Blake was saying about our screenings and stuff, it's like, I feel like it's the romance that just comes out more and more and sticks with you more and more. I mean, maybe because, you know, on your first watch, you're just trying to get a handle of what's going on. And then you're just like in the vibes, in the tone, but it's just the lastingness of that romance and even the Trudy and Tubbs romance that just like, sticks with you when the movie ends, that it's you know, and then you just realize, you're like, I can just leave all the other stuff behind. I mean, obviously we love Jose Hierro, but he's part of this love triangle. And you know, but it's like, you can just leave all the loads behind. You can just leave them behind. Where are they going? No one knows. I don't know where the loads are going or who got them or where they ended up.
Some are going to New York, South Florida. Just leave the loads behind. Katie Walsh coming up with every new episode name for our show as it happens. We'll be right back after this quick break.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Behind, who cares? We're obsessed with loads, Jeff.
Oh, sorry, Jeff.
The amount of times they say loads.
We've had a drinking.
It's like 40 times.
Katie created a bingo. One of our fans created a bingo, and the bingo was every time someone says loads in Miami Vice 2006, you have to drink. And then after about 15 minutes, Katie's like, please go to one.
I'm like, stop doing it. The game is over.
Guys, I'm the referee of this game, and I officially say that that's over. Please stop doing this. We're all going to die. So
I'm like, I have ambulances on standby in every city. You do not drink every time you hear the word loads, because it's like upwards of 40 times. Yeah. I think one of our friends has a great, one of our operatives has a great TikTok account where he does like a TikTok about Michael Mann. And I think he did one where he counted all the loads. Go check out Michael the Man on TikTok. Our friend CK runs it. But anyway, good Michael Mann memes for anyone who needs it. And I know the internet needs those.
We definitely do. So, Jeff, you're now like, you're in this profession. You're doing it regularly. Now that you go back to it, what do you find? Because I find that like, I find I have a great affinity for comfort movies at different periods, whether it's, you know, and that's how a lot of our projects have started. Like people ask, mm-hmm. you know, what kind of leads you to a movie? And, you know, all the way back to One Heat Minute, it was just like, I was pretty regularly on the scene. I was reviewing movies every week, you know, the four movies that came out every week, I'd be writing on at least a couple of them. And there would be some weeks or sometimes a month where like you're watching just a whole bunch of trash or just movies that just aren't very fulfilling or not very creative, or they feel very like rote and there isn't a mood, you can't get on. It's just all kind of fine and doesn't really challenge or engage you. And I find myself like, I just go home and I'd be like, all right, how the hell am I going to even start writing about this or like, you know, collect my thoughts into something rational? And I'm like, I'll just put Heat on first. And, or I'll just put Miami Vice on. And then you just have this thing where it's like this, oh, this is exactly why I love this art. And then sometimes because you're reframing it through the lens of like, this is something I really love. Why does this thing work and resonate with me? And now that you're honing your own craft as a writer and as a person who speaks about film and criticism, you know, and I mean like very talented as far as like critically thinks about movies, when you go back to it, are there still new things that are coming up for you? Are there new wrinkles? Are there new sort of things that you look at it and go, this is kind of this miraculous thing? Because I love that transition from I'm just a moviegoer and a lover and I can't even put my finger on why I love it. It just, mm-hmm. it makes me feel a certain way. And have you been able to unpack that almost like therapeutically in your like?
Yeah, for sure. Career? You mean like revisiting Miami Vice and finding new things on
yes.
rewatch? And
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think my latest rewatch, I think I rewatched it 3 days ago just to prep for the podcast, and one of the things that I focused on more this watch through was the dialogue and how naturalistic it is and how you know, it builds upon the relationships that are already there when the movie starts. And something just as small as, this has never hit me before, but like when Jamie Foxx is talking to John Hawks, Alonzo, after his wife Leonetta has been killed, you know, he doesn't go, oh, your wife is dead. He says, you don't need to go home, you know? And like that just struck me on this watch through, that it never like occurred to me before, but like that's such a great like reading and writing of that line. It's just fantastic, you know, something that I didn't really pick up on before. And I'm sure there's gonna be more as I rewatch this movie over and over and over again, you know.
Like it's the double meaning, like reading between the lines of it all. And like I think that does make it kind of confusing for people on first watch, but it's so pleasurable when you watch it again and focus on the dialogue, and that is such a great line and such a great scene. And you said it was a great reading, because like I don't think we give Jamie Foxx enough flowers for his performance in this too, you know.
When you actually, it's really cool when an actor can do it. It's hard. Sometimes it feels super forced, but when they can show you that they're formulating a way to say something, and he's doing him such a kindness. That's what I love about the line, that line in particular. It's like, you are like, he's a cop. And so many times he has to give people bad news. I'm really sorry to tell you, but there's been something, you know, and you imagine all the ways that someone would, he would have
something like that. Yeah.
Say like, how do you, I can't even imagine saying to someone that their family is gone. Like, and especially if you know them and love them, like someone, you know, they're coming home, and a dear friend of yours, their family's been murdered. Like it would be it's an unimaginable moment. And this movie has lots of like unimaginable, heartfelt, you know, emotionally wrenching moments. And it kind of just does them so fast. And you don't get a chance to really, it's like life. You don't get a chance to react to these things in a way that like you can really process. They just happen at you and you kind of have to deal with it. That's a new obstacle for you to be. And I just love that, where he goes, you don't need to go home.
Yeah.
And it's just like devastation. Like that line.
Punch in the gut. It's, for sure.
Absolutely. And it's, they said it wouldn't hurt.
And you also got, stuff like, I'm a fiend for mojitos. So.
Exactly.
You got the best of both worlds. There.
Such as
totally. Yes. That's a really good point. It's the like balance, because I think the first time I watched the movie, I was like, what is the dialogue? Like, what are these lines? Like, mommy and my daddy love me.
You get your tan in Miami is my underrated line of all time, because it has the best Naomi Harris/Trudy reaction shot, where she just like has to actually cover her mouth to stop from laughing, because everyone can hear her in their like earpieces or whatever, and she just kind of tan in Miami. She's like, oh my God, so embarrassing.
Or like all the Jose, like I'm a disco guy. When Tubbs is like, you want to fuck my partner? It's so funny. But then you do have these like really, you have these ridiculous lines.
Yeah.
But then you have these like also really beautiful, heartbreaking moments of writing. But it's also like the ridiculous lines, like they're authentic and lived in too, because
it's all part like of the fabric cheesy of the movie, for sure.
Yeah, like they're you know, these are undercover cops in Miami.
You said you're familiar with Gong Li. I was really lucky. I got my hands on this incredible box set. It's probably one of the best movie box sets, physical media box sets, you could ever get your hand on. It's the Zhang Yimou Gong Li collaborations box set that the guys at Imprint Films pulled together. And I was a person who was like broadly familiar with her work, but then got to spend a chunk of time for our physical media show, Blues Brothers or Imprint Companion, going through that box set, like ripping through everything, watching docos, like everything. And so I wonder, what's your, like, do you have any other Gong Li favorites that you had seen either before or since that you're like, these are movies that just add other elements of her? Because I don't know if we've given her, speaking of giving flowers, I don't know if we're giving her flowers, because like I almost want to go and grab that box set and be like, there are so many amazing all-star performances from her in like already what is a kind of a complicated like muse artist relationship because it was her partner. So like, are there any other Gong Li movies that you love that you like want to
yeah say? What's in that box set? I mean, obviously Raise the Red Lantern.
Yes, that's in
To
there.
Live. They're both fantastic.
Yes, but both of those in the box set.
Yeah, incredible movies. And then Curse of the Golden Flower, a more recent like wuxia opera kind of movie.
Yes.
It's very opulent and colorful. Yeah, so one of the all-time great collaborations, I think.
In that box set, there is Red Sorghum, which is a beautiful
Red Sorghum,
movie.
Yeah,
which is a beautiful movie. Raise the Red Lantern, The Story of Kyuju, To Live, Shanghai Triad, Curse of the Golden Flower, Coming Home. Really, I mean, I don't even know if you can get them anymore. But like the cinema of Zhang Yimou and Gong Li from 1988 to 2014 is like, go on eBay, find it.
That's a wild box set.
That is a wild box set.
It's a wild box set. Yeah, so as soon as you said it, you're familiar. I didn't want to miss on that opportunity to be like, I think Raise the Red Lantern and To Live, maybe two of the best movies I've ever seen. Yeah, like just ever.
they're so good.
They're just incredible. So, and she's so massive. Like it's like, I think in our conversation recently, you know, with Donnie Yen and people like Hiroyuki Sanada and like John Wick. I'm like, yeah, Hiroyuki Sanada is Japanese Tom Cruise. Like he's so big. And like, we're all like, oh, sick, Hiroyuki Sanada. But like, there's some real ones out there that are like,
he's like, no, you don't understand.
You don't understand. Yeah. And I feel like we haven't done that with Gong Li as much because it's like, you know, it's easy to say, but she's like, so massive, it's unbelievable. And for her to be in this massive Michael Mann movie, also hugely significant for the movie's reach.
Yeah. And I'm hoping for like a similar trajectory for Tang Wei too, because I loved her Decision to Leave. Also, someone who's worked with Michael Mann before in Black Hat, also a movie that I love.
Are you a soy boy?
I am a manhead like through and through. So
another soy boy, Katie.
yes, what we call the Black Hat.
That's what we call the Black Hat fans. You're a soy boy, man. I'm sorry, I don't know what to tell you.
I even like Public Enemies. I don't know that many people that like Public Enemies. I really like Public Enemies. Yeah. I rewatched it recently too. So yeah, and you know, filming that with his signature digital filmmaking is so different too. You know, you never see like a period movie filmed in that manner, you know, handheld, low to the ground, intimate between the characters. And then there's like an added layer in that movie where, you know, it's about this obsession with these two guys chasing each other or escaping. And then, you know, like the institutions of like modern technology, like rising in America around them, you know, like surveillance, FBI, society, like, you know, bureaucracy, you know, that like digital filmmaking just adds a whole nother layer to that. And I really do like that movie. I will say the one thing that I don't really fuck with is the Miami Vice director's cut, just because there's no encore in the beginning.
Jeff,
you can't kill that opening scene. That cold open is just...
Jeff, we will send you the Miami Nice Cut.
The Miami Nice Cut.
We have a little gift for you for our podcast guests.
For all of our podcast guests, it's going to appear in your Twitter DM inbox very shortly, which is the great editor, Vashi Nidamansky, who is a real Hollywood filmmaking editor and filmmaker in his own right and an editorial consultant, did us a favor where he pulled together a Miami Nice cut, which takes the very best of the theatrical cut and then blends into the director's cut. So we get all the, you know, tangential storylines, but
you do.
And we're going to send it to you and you can have it and keep it. And honestly, Katie and I have like, we try and convince people all the time. It's like, look, we don't want to be too like, too glib, but like it's the best version of the movie.
It is really, it's truly the best version of the movie because you get the theatrical opening, but then you get so much more of the Trudy and Tubbs relationship. That I think that really fills in like the emotional tenor of like the climax of the film. And makes you really invest in them as well. So it's funny because I think we had been doing the podcast for like a year where just like every episode we were like, someone really needs to like make a version where we include these scenes when it's a theatrical opening. And then Blake was finally like, fuck it, we're doing it. And he just like got Vashi to do it. And we're obsessed and we like screen it to our like Patreons and friends and stuff all the time. And it's like so good and fun. This is, and just to sort of call back to like what you were talking about earlier, Blake, about like what comfort movies do you like put on to kind of like center yourself? Like, I feel like every time Collateral is like, so I always, you know, that Michael Mann ranking is like Heat. And then it's like, what's your number two? Mine's Collateral, but I do love Miami Vice very much. But every time I watch Collateral, I'm like, cause I have to watch so many movies for work that are of varying quality. Mm-hmm. And, I'm just like, this thing is so effortless. Like it just moves so effortlessly. The fact that you're at like minute 19 and you already have emotional connections to all of the characters, and it's absolutely when the body hits the cab and it's like, you're already on this journey and it's like not even 20 minutes into the movie yet. And I just really respect how easy he makes it look. And so sometimes when I'm watching something that I'm like, this feels so labored, like, why is this taking so long? Or like, it's not even paced wrong, but like, it feels effortful or plotting or something. It's like, I just love like touching back down on something that feels like it just starts and goes and it's like gliding, you know, it's like, it's so graceful. And so that's why I just like love Collateral so much. And because Tom Cruise.
Yeah, I think with Miami Vice, you know, that opening stretch is so good. I had me pinned to my seat. But then, like, when the action kicks in, the action in this movie is fantastic, too. Like, when the Russian FBI informants get blown away in their car, that's, like, that's so kinetic and visceral. And, like, no one does something like that, like Michael Mann, you know?
And there's no coda. There's no warm-up.
That,
and exactly as Katie said, like 19, like you're just like club, bang, Neptune. The Russian informants thing goes down. Alonzo's in the car. The boys are in the car. Like everything's happening. And it's just like, we are not going to take our foot off the accelerator in this movie to even have like the most minor breathing moment until Alonzo's gone. Can these guys be deputized as federal? Try and get like, it's that whole like Fujima scene. Weirdest Japanese name on an Irishman with an American accent of all time. But like that, it's like, that's the same thing. You just pin to your seat for like 19 minutes. And you're like, if you're not, this is the other thing is like, if you're not in by now, like I can't help you. I don't know what to say to you. Yeah. Like I don't, if you're not in, like this isn't like unexpected, cool, great action, like good flirtation. Well,
It, like we've said before, like it starts in motion and it ends in motion, like it's constant momentum. But I think it's also like interesting that it kind of rests in the middle, like when they go to Cuba.
Yes.
And so it's this kind of, you're expecting it to, you know, we have expectations about how movies start and end and how they feel from act one to act two to act three. And like, that's kind of fun to you know, be like, and then this happens and then this happens. But when somebody is really playing with your sense of momentum and time and place and how to, you know, the ebb and flow of the dynamism of like the storytelling, it's so different and weird, but it's also, it's so, it might feel uncomfortable to some people who are like, that's not Collateral, or like, this isn't, you know, what I expected it to be, because it, I think it, he really is, you know, playing with time, like as Jean-Baptiste Thoret has said so beautifully in his essay about Miami Vice. And like, I think that that is something that like sort of takes a while to get used to. But then once you're in, it's like very addictive to kind of revisit and come back to it and like get on that wavelength again.
Yeah. Life is short, time is luck, right?
Time is luck. It's funny because even in when we did One Heat Minute, I had a great comedian on who does the George Lucas show, Connor Ratliff, who's also like a massive Heat fan. And he had a theory, he's like, he was always like, Heat happens over 7 days. And like, this is the last 7 days of Neil McCauley's life. And it was like a really cool theory. And it was only—
wait, Heat happens over 7 days?
Well, that was his theory. Like Heat 2,
I was like, what?
I know, it's a great theory. Watch it again, because he's like, it happens over 7 days. And he's like,
oh my God.
And I was like, oh my God, that is like so crazy. And it actually plays, like when you watch it, it does look like it happens over 7 days. It's only since Heat 2, the book came out, that they're like, oh, over three to four weeks, this happened. Because they actually plot out, you know, obviously in a book, you're doing much more expository kind of explaining of how long things happen. And it happened over a month. That was, that's kind of like canonically true now. But you can totally watch Heat and go, this happens in 7 days. Because like it happens in the more, like, you know, going right from Neil in the middle of the evening, going to steal the ambulance, and then, you know, going from there into the next thing, it feels like if you just went day, night, it's like 7 days. And so it's funny that like Michael Mann, it's not necessarily something that, you know, you're thinking that he's making an overt decision, but it's fun because it's like cinema, you know, movement, time, like fundamentally, these are things that get manipulated, and it's like Collateral is his most explicit manipulation of that. Like this is literally happening in a day. And Miami Vice, like, I've never thought about like, how long does Miami Vice go for? Like, how long are they on this job? Are they on it for like weeks?
I have no idea.
I've never even thought about it, but I'm like, oh shit. Like, how long does a boat— I started thinking, how long does a freighter take from South America to Florida? Like, I don't actually have the answer. But yeah, it's just really interesting that like some of your favorite movies, they kind of mess with you in a way where you can have like really— you can be really sure about exactly how long things happen or how long things are unfolding, but like also have no idea.
Yeah, but like the digital haze of this movie makes it like very hallucinogenic. It's almost like impressionistic, you know, like
it is.
It's easy to lose yourself and like lose your sense of time and like how long this movie takes place over, you know.
Yes.
And I think maybe that's why a lot of people have problems jiving with the movie, just because, you know, it doesn't slow down. And if you're watching it for the first time, you're like, wait, what happened? Wait, why are they doing this? And it's not until like you watch it for a second time that you're like, well, you just got to go with it. You got to go with the flow and soak it all in, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, it really sort of like uproots you from time and day and night and even place, like when they go to Miami or go to Cuba. And it also like kind of uproots you from traditional norms of like plot. And it's like kind of saying like, here's a lot of plot, but also it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Emotionally. Exactly, and it's like this— I love when movies are like challenge you as a viewer to rethink how we think about movies. Like, it's not just like easy pablum or something. It's like, no, this is really challenging me to get on its wavelength, to get on its timing, and sort of reteaching me how to experience cinema. So I appreciate that sort of challenging moment that Miami Vice is. It feels instructive and like it decenters you to like recenter you.
Yeah, I'm the same with you. I love being challenged by the things I watch, you know. So,
so in that spirit, Jeff, we've done this. We did it kind of sort of recently with another guest who folks would have heard, Josh Lewis, came on the show. Mm-hmm. And we kind of ended up tic-tacking into double feature talk. Like, what would you program with Miami Vice? And I would just love to know, like, as a way to help us close out the show, like, if you were going to plan a double feature to try and maybe get those friends that you'd lost in 2006 back back to be manheads again, or just back to just loving this movie, and you had a chance to plan a double feature, what would it be? Like, what movie would you pair with this that maintained the vibe and the energy?
Oh man, you're putting me on the spot here.
I know.
Sorry, Jeff. I just thought of it because you made some wonderful points around the things that resonate with you, and you seem to have like a really clear vision. And I was just like, I would love now I'm almost like, we might have to prep our guests and say, we want to know this, because we had some wonderful answers. Then Katie and I were like stressed out. Like,
what
I
don't even remember what I said.
I think I can't. No, you went on a Miami kick, Katie, and you talked about Scarface. You're like, I would go Miami.
Or Spring Breakers. Maybe Josh Lewis.
Josh had Spring Breakers. And then I had Un Profit.
I stuck with
undercover themed.
Yeah, the thing with double features is you can go in so many directions. You can go with a vibe. You can go with theme. You can go with just, I don't know, like a straight up clash. There's so many things you can do.
Yeah. Okay. This is like, I feel like this is an obvious choice, but Point Break.
Point Break, yeah.
Point Break's a good one. Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. Great one.
I'll pick another movie in my top four, Letterboxd top four, Lust Caution, maybe.
Oh, my
God. Oh.
Romance.
That's great. That's a
romance.
I tell you what.
Read there.
Talk about two movies with some spicy sex scenes.
Yeah,
holy.
<exactly.
laughs> Jeff, you are speaking my language. Great
but,
movie.
I mean,
Tang Wei.
Ong Lee, I mean.
Tony Leung. Oh, Tony Leung.
He's like such a vibes filmmaker too.
Yeah.
Yes. In a way. Not every time, but like he's really in like that. He's into the sort of like, it's more about how it feels.
Yeah.
Than anything else.
Yeah, and another director who uses digital to great effect. I think like right now digital is so, you know, like trying to mimic film and make it look clean and like make it look as great as possible. And then no one's really adding texture like Michael Mann is, or like Ang Lee does with the high frame rate. And I mean, I'm not a huge fan of high frame rate stuff, but I will say that James Cameron's another one of those.
The first time
ever that high frame rates work for me is Avatar 2.
But I do think that like Ang Lee is actually, I mean, like I don't love it either, but I think he's actually being like, well, what purpose does this serve? And like in the same way,
serving a purpose, exactly.
Yeah, in the same way that you know, Man is like using digital photography to like add to the story or like enhance the stories that he's trying to tell, or like, you know, oh, it's nighttime. It's like, we can see all of these things. Like, let's like get all of the, you know, sounds of the night in the mix. And I think that Ong Lee is like really trying to do something with high frame rate, especially with Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, like such a weird movie, but like he's using it to sort of create like an empathetic connection to Billy Lynn. And like, he's actually trying to use it to like create an effect in the viewer, and like that serves the storytelling. So it's like, I don't think he's quite there yet, but he's getting there, and he's doing a lot of interesting stuff with format and technology. So
I do think James Cameron's close to cracking the secret sauce on that, just because, you know, shooting in layers where something on the screen is in a high frame rate and then something else isn't, that's like something only James Cameron would do. And like the underwater stuff looks phenomenal.
But maybe it's like, because I felt so weird like watching Billy Lynn with, and even Gemini Man, like I was like,
Gemini Man, yeah,
which I think is a bad movie, but like I know some people like it, whatever, but it's like when it's a human being, it's like there's an uncanny valley aspect to it. But I think maybe if it's a Navi, it like makes you empathize with the Navi more because they look so real. Anyway, so that's a great double feature.
Great
suggestion.
Pick. Great pick. Sensational.
Jeff,
look, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, my man. Thank you so much. And I'm so glad that you were really holding a torch for this movie as people who walked out of that theater were. And I'm so sorry that you had, I think there is a quotient. You can only really convince two people at a time that Miami Vice rules. If you have a big crew, I just hope that they listen to this that you feel vindicated and just know that you have a home and a community in with our fans anyway that will love to hear that you will ride or die right from the very beginning.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure to talk with you guys. This was so fun.
You know, and it feels like such a 20th century movie. It feels like something David Lean would have done or tried to do when he still had that kind of currency. And even then, he might not have succeeded.
It's incredible because, like, if you don't have time to watch all five seasons of Lost, you can just watch Fearless.
Not a week goes by that I don't think of the ending of Gallipoli. It's left a mark. Year of Living Dangerously. You know, and then something like Last Wave, even that's so deeply embedded with the land and the story of the land, the story of place. You know, I don't know that I'd seen very many movies at that point in my life that had such a down ending and they had such a, you know, sort of strong sense of folklore attached to it as that. And something always so poetic and lyrical about Peter Weir's work.
Gallipoli was the first movie that ever traumatized me, and I don't think I ever really recovered from it. And I'm still upset that they played it in school. Like, I don't think it's actually possible to make an... They say it's not possible to make an anti-war movie, but I think Peter Weir pulled it off.
Yes.
Because no one watches that movie then thinks, I want to go to war.
Peter Weir is the greatest director that Australia has ever produced. Like, bar none, hands down. Like, no one else is even in the room.
I think you have covered some really titanic filmmakers and some really titanic films so far, but I truly think what makes Peter Weir special and what makes you doing this one special is we don't talk about Peter Weir that way, and we should. Peter Weir is one of those guys who I don't get why he isn't a bigger name, why he isn't more in that rarefied air,
yes.
Because I think film for film, he's one of our very best filmmakers. He has brought his A game repeatedly to many properties. There are films of his that I hold very dear. Fearless, The Mosquito Coast. I will fight somebody if they talk bad about The Mosquito Coast. It's, man, I love that movie. But in general, I just think he is a special filmmaker, a smart, lyrical, hallucinatory filmmaker. He's a very dreamy filmmaker, and I don't think he gets his due.
You know, Master and Commander is one of my all-time favorite movies. Easily one of the best movies of the last 20 years. It's, it's a grand scale. There's a historical backdrop to it. But at the same time, there's such an intimacy in the relationships.
Which I think is not just a great film and one of the last great epics in the truest sense. I think is actually kind of a sliding doors change point moment. In cinema history. I think 2003, when that comes along, and it is an old-fashioned, you know, we don't make them like that anymore type film. I think if Master and Commander spawns a franchise at that point, the entire cinema landscape globally is completely different.
That's the movie that I wanted to see 10 of those, you know. I know they're big fans of Fast and Furious and everything, and God bless you, but Master and Commander should have been.
It's one of those things. Again, I'm not a seafaring man, sir. But there is a sense of authenticity. There's a sense of really watching a genuine dedication to recreating history unfold on a big screen in front of you that can't help but inspire just genuine admiration and awe.
If you're gonna pick a film where he really brings every one of his skills to the table, it's Master and Commander. I think you picked the right one, man.
Yeah, very excited to see what you pull out of this, Blake.
That's right. Our next series is Peter Weir and Russell Crowe's Master and Commander. The series is called Podcaster and Commander.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.